Which Jason are you? Which
fear? I'm the better Jason. Jason Wheeler.
Do you like the fruit flavored beers?
I do. Okay. I have a tendency to, yeah, go for those. The summery.
I watched a bunch of your segments and y'all are hilarious and very, very smart about Texas politics, but the beer is funny to me.
You know, when we get compliments like this, I'm always happy that Whiteley's not here to hear them because he probably doesn't deserve them as much as I do.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
I love when people say, so which Jason are you?
Yeah.
But the fact that she knows you for your fruity beer,
she knows me well. A lot. She is obviously a regular listener and watcher because I've got another one of those today.
I'm not surprised, but I brought a selection of four, all different kinds of beers. I didn't bring fruit, and of course, you brought your orange cider today.
Why do you have four beers?
Because I never know what you're going to like.
Okay.
Well, some of these are apropos. Some are apropos to the episode here. This one's okay. FUBAR.
Okay.
Which, what FUBAR stands for?
No, what does it mean?
It's effed up beyond all recognition. I have a West Coast IPA.
Derelict. It's called Derelict. Derelict. That kind of fits in a way.
And then these two are kind of
thematic.
Yeah, for this episode. Then an Oak Cliff Lager and an Oak Cliff Lee Hazy Oswald.
Oh, Lee Hazy Oswald.
And that's a good one. I haven't had lunch yet, though, so I need to go with the lightest one we have here so I can still operate today.
Let's see if we can get all four of these down during this podcast. So the woman that you heard there at the very beginning, obviously, she has good taste because she saved the compliments for when it was just the two of us.
Yeah, right.
Without you there. But always nice to hear good things about the podcast. And, you know, to hear another, and we know that this happens. We know that a lot of folks who are in Austin, in positions of power, listen to the podcast, even if they won't actually take up our invitation to be on the podcast with us. But she did, and she is a listener. That is Brooke Popp. She is the chairwoman of the Texas Water Development Board. And we're talking to her about this flood plan that her office just dropped this in August. This is the first one that Texas has ever had. And I think that a lot of people would find that surprising.
And before you pause the episode, before you turn us off, water is an existential problem for this state. There's either too much of it or not enough of it. Mm-hmm. We've talked in the past episodes about how there's not enough water here and you know, big areas like Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, they're having trouble. They're growing too fast,
right?
And the water's not keeping up.
Don't have enough water
to drink and may not have enough for the future growth. Then on the other side,
so they've addressed, they've been addressing that.
They've been trying to address that.
Yeah.
And on the other side of it, the state flood plan, as you mentioned here, This state has been flooding for as long as this ground came up out of the water, you know? And the fact that we haven't had a flood plan here is remarkable to me. But we finally have one. What surprised everyone, though, is the price tag.
The price tag. You may be surprised by the price tag as well. You may also find it interesting, after all of these millennia, what inspired this flood plan to finally come about? And, you know, this affects all of us. So, yeah, don't turn it off because we're seeing a lot of floods in a lot of places in Texas. And they expect that this is going to get worse as we go forward. OK, so this is something that's going to become, you know, a big effect for a lot of us. It's hard to insure a lot of things these days. It's getting expensive to insure a lot of things. And floods are one more reason why.
So is the price tag going to prevent Texas from even considering this? It's something that, you know, they're going to be talking about in Austin in the coming days, coming weeks, and in the next political session.
But, you know, on the flip side of that argument, it is more expensive not to do anything.
True. So here's Brooke Popp. Let's get back to her here because she does know Wheeler, likes the fruity beer here.
Yeah.
And she's the president of the Texas Water Development Board.
And by the way, I am having an Austin East Cider's Blood Orange as we take a listen to the interview I did with her.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
So we've got Brooke Poff here with us from the Texas Water Development Board. She is the chairwoman. Thanks so much for being with us here on Eolitics, especially to talk about the big flood plan. And congratulations on getting that done.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Jason. And which Jason are you? Which
I'm the better Jason, Jason Wheeler.
Do you like the fruit flavored beers?
I do. Okay. I have a tendency to, go for those. The summery
light. I watched a bunch of your segments and y'all are hilarious and very, very smart about Texas politics, but the beer is funny to me.
You know, when we get compliments like this, I'm always happy that Whiteley's not here to hear them because he probably doesn't deserve them as much as I do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jason Wheeler gets the compliments.
Yes. That's at least we should start that trend because it hasn't really been that over the years. So let's start that here today. Thank you for watching and for listening and for enjoying the podcast. So here's the thing I was going to ask you about this. Sure. You guys... I shouldn't say you guys, the Texas Water Development Board, by the way, is led by two women. Yeah, the top one in charge, and your deputy is also a woman. And I was joking with our producer on this because he pointed that out to me. And I said, that's why we've gotten our first flood plan, because two women were in charge and got it done.
No, I love that, Jason. And not to toot the governor's horn, but I am the first woman chair of the board since its inception.
Wow.
So the governor's always been very pro women in leadership, and I think really shines at the Water Development Board.
Mm-hmm. So you guys, you all have been working on this for 5 years. I mean, this has been, and I think you tweeted out something about, we finally released this earlier this month. You tweeted this out and said, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this. I can only imagine because that spans the time of the pandemic. I mean, you all went through an odd period here trying to put together a huge plan for the state of Texas.
No, that is a great point. And it wasn't just 5 years, honestly. It all really started in 2017. I was still at the controller's office doing taxes, mm-hmm. which aren't nearly as fun as water infrastructure. But in 2017, what hit in the summer?
Yeah, it was, and it was right around this time, in fact, Hurricane Harvey.
It was, and it was very unexpected. And, the largest natural disaster to ever hit the state of Texas.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who didn't live in Southeast Texas or the Houston area do not fully understand what that storm did. That was like $125 billion in damages. We had scores of people here in Texas who were killed by that because it just parked and just dumped and dumped and dumped rain.
It did. It was a huge loss of life and property. And going into that session, that was on the 2019 session, Hurricane Harvey was on everyone's mind. Mm-hmm. So in 2017, the Water Development Board, which at the time was much smaller, mm-hmm. I always say small but mighty agency, but we were tasked with doing the first ever state flood assessment. And this was really based more on river basin flooding. It really wasn't capturing what happened with Hurricane Harvey. But then Harvey hit, and the state flood assessment took on a whole new importance to the state. Mm-hmm. So we went around, I was appointed in 2018, we went around statewide and really asked every region, because every region of the state of Texas is so different, what do you need to mitigate flood? What are your flood risks? What are you seeing on the ground? How can the state help? Mm-hmm. We wrapped that up in a bow, a not so pretty bow, and delivered it to the legislature in 2019, basically saying, we have very old maps. All of our flood maps are outdated. If we did have any flood maps, half the time they were paper and they were 8 to 10 years old. The data wasn't there. The growth in Texas is extreme. So the developments, we need to know where the developments are to help address flood risks. And we needed more money for mitigation. So wrap that up in a bow, gave it to the legislature. They looked at it, took it seriously, and passed SB 7 and SB 8, which created the Flood Infrastructure Fund and the Flood Planning Bill.
Mm-hmm. And so then your work really began because now you had to put together this huge comprehensive report that we just got earlier this month. And let's get into some of the figures from this. I mean, it's pretty staggering. I mean, I think that a lot of us may deal with flooding from time to time, you know, where we live and not really pay attention to what's going on, you know, really closely around the rest of the state. But boy, we've got some issues here in Texas. It's a big place, obviously, lots of rivers, of course, a huge coastline. But you all found that about a quarter of the state land area has a chance in any given year of having a 100 or even 500 year flood. That's tremendous when you think about that, because those are that would be a huge flood. And we're talking about a quarter of the state that's prone to that in any given year. You found 1.6, almost 1.7 million buildings or structures that are in these, you know, flood-prone areas, including more than 6,000 hospitals, emergency medical services, fire stations, police stations, schools. It sounds like we're really, really vulnerable here in this state. The question is, how do you fix that?
Well, I mean, how we fix that is sound data, which leads to sound planning, which leads to sound mitigation. We really emphasized with the first round of flood infrastructure grants, the planning portion. We didn't know what we didn't know with flood mitigation in the state of Texas. Obviously, this was our first bite at the apple. So we got dollars out quickly to communities to really address what they thought they needed for flood mitigation dollars, got those studies and data in, and then started to commit funds to actual projects, actual flood mitigation projects. And to date, we have committed almost $680 million to projects throughout the state that will truly save lives and property. But that's just the beginning. That was pre-state flood plan. That was what we could do within those 5 years of trying to get the state flood plan up and running. Now the work has really just started.
I saw you guys, you all put out, I think it was more than 4,600 recommendations of things that can be done. That's huge. And I'm dying to know how you even wrapped your arms around all of this, because it's just so much. But 4,600 flood risk solutions, the total price tag, $54.5 billion. That's a huge number. But a big portion of that is for one project. So, you know, we can kind of get into that, but it's a big price tag for sure.
Well, even discounting that one project, which is the Galveston Bay surge, what are we calling it?
I like to call it the Ike Dyke.
I've been told by my sweet comms people that are standing right here not to call it the Ike Dyke.
Okay, tell them
Galveston
I did
Bay
it.
Galveston Bay Surge Protection Project.
Basically, it's intended to keep something similar from what we saw with Ike, with that, you know, big storm surge from coming in. That's a very expensive project there.
It's very expensive. It's necessary. It's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. And it was half the price tag. But even discounting the Ike Dyke, the price tag was still larger than I ever anticipated, truly. I knew it was going to be in the billions of dollars, because if you look at just the state water plan, basically the sister plan of the state flood plan that we put out every 5 years, that is the comprehensive policy document for water planning for the state of Texas, that has a capital cost of $80 billion. So I assumed it would be in the billions. I did not assume or anticipate it would be almost $55 billion.
Have you gotten early reaction there in Austin? You know, I mean, legislators are obviously going to have to take a huge bite into this in this next session. Have you gotten any feedback from anyone? I know that the governor was very pleased with the report, but have you gotten any feedback from anyone about the price tag? Did it surprise others?
The price tag has surprised the entire Capitol, honestly. It did not surprise our locals, our 15 regional flood planning groups. They are well aware of how they flood, the risks of flooding, and what they're dealing with on a daily basis. But to wrap up all 15 plans and put them into one singular plan with one price tag, it was pretty extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Chairwoman Pop, how political does this get? You know, because we're talking about flooding. Obviously, no one wants flooding. Everyone wants to try to do their best to keep flooding from happening. But I would imagine that in these 5 years, as you went around the state to different regions and everyone has their different needs and everyone has their priorities and everyone thinks that their priority should be the top priority, and everyone has their own fiefdoms, essentially here. Is it going to be hard to navigate the politics of getting progress and getting some uniformity here in this state on how we address flooding?
Well, that's an interesting question. Lives and property don't care about politics. Floods and waters don't care about politics. And the volunteers and the people that served in the 15 regional flood planning groups, and they are volunteers mm-hmm. who spent 5 years of their lives developing these plans that will help save their constituents and their family members, don't care about politics. Okay. What they care about is mitigation strategies that will actually work. Mm-hmm. And that's what we presented to the governor and the legislature. We presented the basics. This was the first bite of the apple. We told all the regions, include everything that you think you need. This is your first chance to tell us what you really need. Don't pare it down. We really want to see what the regions, because what works in El Paso is not going to work down in South Texas. We want to see the varied management strategies and implement them and see what sticks and what doesn't stick.
And I love that you mentioned El Paso just now. I used to live in El Paso years ago. It's a great place.
I always tell everyone, if I didn't live in Austin, I'd live in El Paso.
It's a hidden gem here in much of this state. I think a lot of people are not aware of it. Some of the worst flooding I've seen was in El Paso. And, you know, people tend to think of that as being out there in dry West Texas. It happens, especially when you get into the monsoon season in the summertime. And I'm glad that you mentioned it, though, because every region, like you said, has its own different issues with flooding. Floods in El Paso are very different from floods in Houston, the way that they come about and the way that they, you know, recede and all of that. And so there's so many different needs. And I was struck by, you know, when I was looking through the report, and I think it's, what, 290 something pages, was it?
It is. Okay. I've got it right here. It is.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
But it needs to be a lot because it's a big state and we've got a lot of issues here. But as I was looking through it, what struck me, or one of the things that struck me, was you all put in maps in there as to, you know, what's at risk and you know, where we've got buildings at risk and different flood issues. And you can really get a sense of how big of a statewide problem this is and how much of a regional problem this is. You know, I think we all just tend to think of the coast and areas along rivers and so forth. But I mean, when you look at buildings that are threatened, you know, which include homes, this is all over this state.
Yeah, flood is an issue that we all grapple with. It doesn't really matter where you are in the state of Texas. It is a natural risk for us. We always say that at the board, half the time we're dealing with catastrophic droughts, half the time we're dealing with catastrophic floods, and there's almost no in between. With those, the state is just, it's a large state and we just have to deal with the giant issue of flooding. And I think that in 2017, we had the right mentality by going statewide to as many different regions as we could to really drill down on what everyone specifically needed, north, south, east, west, central. Because again, what works in El Paso is not going to work down in Harlingen. So we got that data and really started in 2017.
As a former resident of Austin as well, I can say that at least, you know, when I was there, they seemed to do a really good job, you know, being that it's in the Hill Country, especially, of creating retention ponds when there was new construction so that if they had flood runoff, it had somewhere to go. You all, you know, that's one of the things that you all are proposing in this plan here as a possible, you know, flood mitigation. Also, storm sewers, natural-based solutions, ditches. I mean, you all really throw it all out there. And ways to sort of, you know, pull this water aside and hold it in places when we get too much of it. I'm curious, does some of that water then become useful over time? If you're able to redirect it and put it somewhere, does it become useful after the flood?
No, that is a great question. There, when it floods, a lot of individuals really look at that potential water supply benefit. Mm-hmm. But here's the tough thing about flood water. Jason, it's incredibly dirty. Mm-hmm. If you think of a toxin, it's in that water. And even if we capture it, the treatment process would be very expensive. That's not to say that the technology is not out there and we're not looking at that. In fact, if you could prove that your flood mitigation project had a water supply element, you got extra points. Mm-hmm. So that would help with your financial assistance. So we'd like to pair the two. We're not there just yet, but we will get there.
Yeah, let's fix the big problems first. And my takeaway from this was roadways are a huge issue.
They are huge.
And we all know this. I mean, if you've been in Texas long enough, you know that these low water crossings, I mean, there's a reason they've got the catchy slogan of turn around, don't drown. Unfortunately, a lot of people do drown. And that's where it happens in those low water crossings, especially at night when we're dealing with flooding. And you all identified 9,322 low water crossings that need some attention here. And then also 43,000 miles of roadways. I was struck by the fact that so many people die in their cars in floods, you know, and Texas leads the nation in flood related deaths.
You know, we always like to be the best and the brightest in the state of Texas. This is not a statistic I care about. I would like to be last place. And unfortunately, Jason, one of my good friends at Governor Abbott's office, back in 2017, lost three loved ones in the Wimberley Day floods in a car. So the low water crossings and the flood early warning systems, you'll see that they are pulled out specifically in the plan. Mm-hmm. That is because they are that important to me personally, mm-hmm. because I watched what happened when one of my dear friends lost her sister. Mm-hmm. And her niece and nephew, just tremendously sad. And my dearest friend, who also worked for Governor Abbott. So obviously Governor Abbott has some personal ties to this state flood plan. She barely escaped with her life in the Onion Creek floods, Halloween. And I just remember the devastation coming back on Halloween and seeing what was left of her house. And this is in Austin. This is not in rural Texas. This was in Austin, where a lot of people that work at the Capitol live in that neighborhood. And it was just pure devastation. Mm. So the rationale for pulling out the low water crossings and the flood early warning systems really came from personal experiences of mine, because I know that if we can beef those up, we will actually save lives. The property is very important too, but the lives are the important thing for me.
Well, and we've seen that happen, you know, when we think about tornadoes, for example, you know, we've gotten so much better at saving lives over time because we've got those early warning systems in place. The technology is there. People are warned. They know to get somewhere. In many cases, you've got warning, early warning systems with flooding. That could be huge as well. How would that look if we were to change the early warning system? How does that look?
Well, I mean, obviously, the earlier you can alert the public that there is a potential for flood, the safer off we will be.
And everybody's got a phone now. Is that the way
Everyone
it's going to be
phone.
Done?
Everyone has a phone. The alerts can be sent out. We're working on it. And again, it's very locally based. So mm-hmm. when the locals decide they want to use this information to blast out to their constituents, that's probably the best and easy and the most efficient way to get this information out.
Is the technology there for, you know, if I'm driving through Wimberley, I don't live in Wimberley, but I'm driving through Wimberley, that, you know, just because I'm in that geographical area, they can do the blast out from the tower there and hit my phone like anybody else's phone?
I think the technology is there. It just requires buy-in from the regional groups to mm-hmm. ensure that they are using that data to blast out to their citizens. We, the Water Development Board, also is in charge of a weather program called the TexMesonet. Mm-hmm. And these are basically small weather stations that measure rainfall, wind, And we are now the head of the Mezzanet stations statewide. And we are looking to increase the amount of stations we have. So that will definitely help with those rainfall data capabilities as well.
When we start talking about 9,322 low water crossings that are real issues here, what do we do about that? Do we, I mean, are we going to have, you know, like a permanent barrier that can come down almost like a railroad crossing arm so that we don't have to depend on a human to go out there and put up cones to warn people? Do we raise those? I mean, what do we do?
It's very specific to the location. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, they are not easy. These are not easy fixes. Mm-hmm. You know, they take a lot of dollars and take a lot of time to mitigate those low water crossings, but they are extremely important if your main goal of flood mitigation is to save lives. Mm-hmm. One thing that I would love to get across, Texans love their trucks. Mm-hmm. They love their big, heavy trucks. I get it. My husband drives one. Those trucks are nothing compared to a flash flood. You think they're heavy, you think they're strong, you think you can outrun it, you cannot. Everyone underestimates the power of water until you're faced with it. So just don't do it. That turnaround, don't drown, that is the perfect statement. Just don't do it. Stay put.
Chairwoman Pop, it sounds like some of the money that needs to be spent here would be in education then.
Yeah.
I mean, we're stubborn. You know, we think, come on, you know, I can drive my car through this. I mean, we see it with every flood. You see this tiny car going down a road, let's say in Pasadena, Texas, that you know has 3 feet of water on it. And you think there's no way you're going to make that.
Yeah, the education's a big component. We really hope that people look at the flood risks and look at what their region's doing and evaluate how they handle floods moving forward. Mm-hmm.
Are we going to need, or are more of us going to need flood insurance?
Well, that is a good question. Along the coast, I think that question pops up more often. I think that's really a personal decision.
Mm-hmm. When we look at this price tag, this $54.5 billion price tag, it seems like a whopper when you first look at it. Obviously, this is an overtime kind of thing that we're talking about. You're not going to go to the legislature in January and say, let's get all that up front. Just give me the check now. And we're going to do all of these right now. These are long-term projects. It's going to be a mix of funding, I would assume, from the state, from local governments. They're going to have to figure out creating districts maybe even to pay for these things. And then I would imagine that the federal government would be a big part of a lot of this as well. And in the middle of all of this, when you all were putting this thing together, there you had the Infrastructure Act that was passed in DC. Yeah. And I'm wondering how closely you were reading through the details of that to figure out, you know, how much of this could be, you know, pulled in to help us with what we're trying to do here.
Well, the IIJA, it was helpful for infrastructure in the state of Texas. For water supply and water infrastructure, it really flowed through our state revolving funds. It did not truly impact our flood programs. Mm-hmm. It was very useful. It was useful. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is the demand for these dollars is so tremendous that the dollars coming from the federal government, although they seem large, are just simply not enough.
Mm-hmm. So Texas is going to have to figure this one out then.
We do. Well, we're in an independent area. We love to figure things out ourselves. We're not going to sit and wait for the federal government to do it.
Mm-hmm. What does the legislature do with this then? Come January, what do they do with this? Do they start going through your report here with a fine tooth comb and figuring out, you know, do we triage this? Do we, you know, try to figure out which areas are the absolute worst and we got to get in and deal with that and, you know, maybe get some of these longer term projects started on some other things? Do we, you know, expect the locals to jump in and start working on this? Are they going to need to be told to start working on this?
They don't need to be told. Okay. The 15 regions are on it. And in fact, we're already working on the next phase, the next state flood plan already. The second Jeez. We got this one to the printer, we started working on the next one.
Because it's going to change as we go through time, obviously. Change. We've got more people moving here. We've got more development. We don't always have the best development standards. That was another big standout from your report. When you look at these swaths of Texas that really just don't really have any standards for building things and making them flood resistant and so forth. So I would imagine there's going to be a lot of work in that area too.
I think that there will be a lot of just in general, a new fresh look at flood in the state of Texas, because we do have this plan now. It's 200 plus pages delivered to the legislature. I hope they read it. I know they will. The dollar amount is staggering. It is so large. I honestly would like to cut it up into bite-sized pieces for the ledge, because I think it's overwhelming when you look at a $54.5 billion price tag, but we don't need that immediately. What we need immediately is flood infrastructure fund money so we can get those flood mitigation projects built again, the ones that immediately save lives and property, continue on that progress, because we have 5 years of progress in saving lives and property, continue that. And work towards the goals of the state flood plan. And I will say that the state of Texas is a victim of our own success. The 1,300 people that move here a day, they need housing. They need a place to live. So it's understandable that housing was the first thing that we somewhat looked at when we were looking at flood risks. But we have a great relationship with our builders and contractors. They really weighed in on this, and we worked with them hand in hand to come up with the best possible state flood plan.
And you didn't solve flooding here. Important to say that. We're still going to flood and quite a bit. It's just going to happen. The goal here is to make it less deadly and less destructive.
100%. Unfortunately, we can't eliminate flood. It's literally impossible, but we can mitigate the risk, and we can save lives, and we can save people's homes.
And when people are put off by a price tag, I mean, we're paying for it anyway. One way or the other, you pay for it. I think you all identified as of the writing of this that we've had 9 multi-billion dollar flood events in Texas from 1980 to 2024. And if you look at any, the data from NOAA, shows that, we're having more and more of these billion-dollar disasters every year. And so this is going to keep being something that we're going to have to pay for one way or the other, whether that's through huge, insurance payouts or, more expensive projects to build and replace things. We're paying for it one way or the other.
No, absolutely. And Jason, I would submit that it is more expensive if we do nothing.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to last ask you about dams, because you all got into dams in this report too. And I was blown away by the fact, I mean, we have 7,400 dams here in Texas. And you all identified that 1,541 of them are classified as having a high hazard potential, where failure or misoperation would likely cause loss of life. I mean, there's a whole tier system there, but that, I guess, is the worst of it, that high hazard potential. Were you surprised by that or anything else that you all found in this report?
Well, I mean, the report is eye-opening, because it is the first ever state flood plan. It's the first time that we ever really, truly, holistically looked at the issue of flooding in the state of Texas and comprehensively addressed it. So yes, the dam numbers were surprising. All of the data was very sobering in the report. But the good thing is we have a legislature that has shown that they're willing to address flood. Last session, they appropriated $625 million to our agency to help mitigate flood. And we have committed almost entirety of those funds, and we will keep working.
Mm-hmm. It is good to see it being taken seriously, and it's good to see something good coming out of Harvey, because Harvey brought a lot of bad back in 2017. So it's nice to see that, in the wake of something like that, we all did sort of wake up and go, we need to have some better plans than this. And I think that, people might have assumed that Texas had a flood plan, all along. But it's just one of those things that comes about where, we flooded so many times, you would think that we had something like that, But I think that everybody sort of woke up there and went, we need something that we can pull off the shelf here and, you know, see if we can get on top of this or in front of this.
Well, I don't want this document that we spent 5 years to be something that people pull off the shelf, blow the dust off of, and they look at occasionally. This is the key to saving lives and property in the state of Texas. And this is 5 years worth of data science and planning. It's an extraordinary document, and we are extremely proud of it. I will say, Jason, and you know this as a veteran political reporter, government's inherently reactive. I've lived and breathed Texas politics for 20 years. I've worked in every agency under the sun. We are inherently reactive because we don't have the resources to be proactive. This is one issue where the legislature is giving us the resources to be as proactive as we can.
And you expect some possibly big checks to be written in this next session after this report?
I think infrastructure is a big deal. And I think the legislature has noted that. It's on their priority list. You know, I can never say what's going to happen in session, but they have all the data they need to make an informed guess.
Yeah, I should never be asking somebody for predictions about the legislative session.
Please don't.
Yeah, that's a fool's errand. Okay, so that's my final thing here. You do love the job. You've been doing it for quite a while. Your term expires February 1st of 2025. Is that right? And so you've just delivered this behemoth report.
Yep.
This is a big legacy thing. I'm curious, do you want to stay past February 1st, or are you ready for something different?
That's an excellent question. I have some big plans for water in the state of Texas, and I think the legislature and leadership do as well. I'd love to see those through. Should I be allowed to? Should I be blessed with the opportunity to keep this role for a few more years? I would love to. But I'm an appointee. I am subject to Senate confirmation and to the governor. So we will see. But it's the best job I've ever had. It is the most personal job I've ever had. I was a lawyer and a tax collector. Never popular to be the lawyer and the tax collector. And then I turned to the Water Development Board, and I'm literally seeing infrastructure built that provides water, wastewater, and now flood mitigation. Quick highlight. Down in the valley, there was an ISD that had no running water. And this was right in 2018 when I was appointed to the board. The Water Development Board provided $800,000, just a grant, which is tiny. When you look at the commitments we made, $2 billion to the Beaudark, Houston's $3 billion. So $800,000 to a small ISD. It was the first time this ISD was able to hook up and provide running water to their kids. So the superintendent drove all the way from the valley to Austin to testify and to thank us. And the children sent a video. And of course, I'm crying because I've got kids. But that is what the job is all about. It's just seeing how that infrastructure really, truly impacts people's day-to-day lives.
That is really rewarding. And I'm sure that got you through some probably not fun days of putting together all of this data over 5 years, and probably some long nights in there as well. And some thoughts about, you know, yeah, we need to put everything in this report, but ooh, I hate looking at that big price tag and having to give that over to lawmakers.
Yes. I have to give kudos to our flood staff here. What we asked of them during a pandemic was absolutely bananas. It was a huge effort in the best of times. During a pandemic, it was a Herculean effort to build a program from the ground up when we didn't have the science and data in place. Terrifying. They did it with ease and elegance, and flood can sometimes be political if you're not careful. They were able to get the best possible document out with the best possible solutions in that time frame, in that very, very tight time frame. So Hats off to the TWDB staff. They're incredible. I am so blessed to be able to work with them. Just truly the best civil servants I've ever worked with.
Well, a huge thanks to all who do this and who have put the blood, sweat, and tears, as you say, into this. And here's hoping that, you know, everybody involved got this right and that the ball gets taken further down the field now from what you all have put out there. Because as you mentioned, water is one of the most critical things in Texas, you know, as far as policy goes, because, you know, we have to address, you know, getting more of the water we want and dealing better with the water that we don't want that comes in huge amounts a lot of times. Thank you so much for being with us today, Chairwoman Popp. And we will look, we'll keep on watching this as it makes its way through the legislature in this upcoming session. I would imagine that you might even be there testifying.
I will. I think starting Tuesday. I think we've got a triple header on Tuesday.
Oh, wow. So you're getting started before the legislature even begins.
We do. I've got my hand out.
Very nice. Well, we hope that you get plenty of checks in that hand and actually bring some of these things to fruition, because as you mentioned, it is all about saving lives, and we got to do a better job of that here in Texas.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jason. I owe you a fruit-flavored beer.
Yes, we will do that next time. We don't. Neither one of us has one right now. I have a coffee in front of me. A fruit-flavored beer sounds a lot better.
Yes, I no beer this early, but I will buy you some sort of fruit-flavored beer.
Next time I'm in Austin. Yep. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Click subscribe and get Y'all-itics every week. Y'all-itics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
So, she is already having to testify there before the legislature as they get ready to go back into session in January. And I think that we are probably going to see some really big items relating to water in Texas as we go into this session. And this is going to be a huge chunk of that. I'm curious to see how lawmakers digest this price tag. This price tag was never intended to be like, hey, give it all to me right now and let's start it all today. This is supposed to be one of these long-term things where, you know, you fund and you fund as you go. And then, you know, local governments do the same and federal government pitches in money. But it's a behemoth for sure.
And she's going to be testifying in front of the Senate Committee on Water, Agriculture, and Rural Affairs. The leader of that committee is the chairman. The chairman is State Senator Charles Perry. He's from Lubbock. And this is like almost a passion project for him. He knows how serious this is. He knows what an existential threat this is for Texans if we don't get flooding figured out, if we don't get drought figured out. So he realizes that. And one of the main questions we had for him is, well, at a price tag of $54.5 billion, number one, where do you start? Number two, who is the priority? But we called him up in Lubbock and asked him that and a lot more.
We never had a plan in state for water planning, for flood planning, which is kind of surprising to some people. Specifically, what our flood planning before the plan was is you got a flood problem in your area, you fix it typically by moving the water off your area onto some other person, some other place. So we said that's not a good method. So we have coordinated that under a watershed planning to where all municipals and population bases are included in fixing a regional plan. So we're not just moving water on top of the other. So that's where the plan basis, working with Corps of Engineers and some conversation I had at the federal level. So it transpired. It took us till this year to actually approve the plan formally. But since 2019, large dollars from the state and federal government have been put into process with the understanding that everything they were doing would be something that would be eligible under the state water floodplain. So we haven't spent money foolishly. We've spent money wisely. And most of that money to date has been spent on planning and engineering and right-of-ways and what is the solution. So we don't have a lot of tangible fixed assets to show for the dollars spent today. And I don't have that number off the top of my head because there was such a intermixing of federal and state dollars and then local dollars. Yeah. Houston, Texas actually approved a $2 billion bond package to fix some of their flooding. But it can go specifically to dredging out canals and reservoirs and opening more capacity to catch and keep rain. The state spent several million dollars on LIDAR mapping, which truly, if you ever get a chance to go to the Water Development Board, pull up the flood plan, you could put in a particular area and put in what would happen if a 4-inch rain occurred here. What is the property damage and the loss that could be lost? It's very sophisticated. And the state did the backbone and the infrastructure to build the flood plan on. So
that's— Wait, is that online for anybody to see, Senator?
I believe that anybody can access. Now, how you get there through the portal and what the sites are, but I'm sure if you typed in flood planning, you're going to get the plan itself and then the right LIDAR. And you can do this for water supply planning. They've got every regional planning group with what water shortages they need, how they anticipate to meet the need, and the deficit that still exists. So pretty sophisticated if people have got time and are kind of wonky, I guess, that are into that kind of conversation. It's pretty sophisticated stuff. It's been very successful in giving direction to our locals to bring back regional plannings that should prevent some flooding from occurring going forward.
Senator, how much of the state flood plan is an acknowledgement on the right that the weather is changing in this state, in this country, on this planet?
You know, I don't, the political words, right? Climate change, global warming stuff. Here's the deal. Our climate changes every day. It was interesting. I saw some statistic on the other day. We had cooler weather here. And I think they were predicting 30 named hurricane storms coming through this season, and we're going to get blown away and overrun. It hasn't happened, but our weather patterns change. The air streams do change. The jet streams do change. Concrete adds heat to the bill. So, we've got to consider those factors, but are those the sole purpose of why we have flooding events and why we have seasons? Patterns change. You know, there was a time when Lubbock, Texas could be guaranteed 2 feet of snow if when I moved here 40 years ago. Now we see 6 inches. But it could go back to 1.5 feet next week. It's just things change. So I'm not going to, the politics of it, I think we're wise to recognize in our water planning, both flood and supply, drought conditions, weather patterns and trends, and look over a large time period to see if they're consistent with seasonal changes in the back of the day. This short version of we look for 10-year cycles and project out that we're going to all burn up and the ocean's going to be full of fresh water, that's not realistic. You got to look back at a trend. And I think there is some warming element to that. I always ask the question, and you've seen it in the floodplain, if we want to have 100% certainty that we're protected from all of these issues that are being raised, that's not realistic. At 90% confidence to know there is, there's a price. At 80%, there's a price. So when your solution becomes such a detriment to the working poor and the other people that are expected to pay for it, you got to weigh those cost benefits, right? We don't want to ever see life lost. And we, for the most part, a lot of the life lost is because people didn't do their responsible thing and get out when they were told, right? Yeah. So it's a two-edged street here. The climate, I acknowledge climate's changed since me and you've been talking. It'll be warmer or colder before I leave here today because climate's changing. The long-term impact of that, it's just seasons change. Our jet stream has changed out here. It just has. In my 63 years, our weather patterns have shifted different. And it's just going to happen. That's been the evolution of time.
Let me ask you. Go ahead, sir.
We just need to consider those and plan accordingly within the responsible cost-benefit analysis.
Let me ask you about the other side of water. There are urban areas in this state, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, Houston. They don't have enough water to, you know, maintain and sustain the current amount of growth they have. And there's been a lot of debate about when and where to put new reservoirs to sustain all this growth. What is the state doing to try to get ahead? Because this is an issue that's fast approaching these areas in the state that's not really being addressed publicly, it seems like.
Yeah, I think it's fixing to get addressed publicly based on my efforts. I mean, it's just time. It's time to have an open, honest, transparent conversation about water supply in Texas to meet the population and the industry groups. Our current statewide water plan assumes that we're going to put on 4 million acre feet of water through reservoir development, 22 reservoirs, and then the plan in real estate because of economic, regulatory, and political pressures, about half of those are never going to come. So we're really looking at about 1 million acre feet possible of development over the next 50 years through reservoir development. So I've taken the plan apart. I've gotten realistic. We're about 10 and a half to 12 million acre feet short of where we need to be to meet Texas water needs. The good news is,
when you say 10 and a half or 12 million acre feet, that sounds like a lot to me. What does that equate to?
Yeah,
that...
Let me put it in perspective. We use about 13 million acre feet in Texas today. We're literally about 12 million, I'd say 10 to 12 conservatively short of where we want to be in 50 years. But that 50-year time frame is really stretching. There are areas in the state today that need a supply alternative. Here's the good news. We need 10 to 12 million acre feet. I have, through study, figured out that there's about 100 million of potential acre feet per year to develop that's not been developed. And realistically, about 50% of that, 50 million acre feet, that we can do economically. So we have 50 million acre feet available for a problem that needs 10 to 12 million acre feet, and that will take Texas into the next century, plus another century probably of water to supply.
How long is it going to take to develop that, you think, Senator?
That's the problem with water. I tell people, when the grid goes out, you know it immediately, and there's an outcry, and the legislature acts. If the broadband don't work today, there's an outcry and we fix that. Here's about water supply. It's death by 1,000 drips. And when you realize the patient is going terminal, it's 30 years from that point to fix it. We have some triage measures to patchwork it to get it to the next level when we can actually solve the full long-term problem. Texas must, and I cannot stress enough, must in 25 legislative session start the front loading of the funding to be recovered once water is delivered to all 254 counties. And there's five different supply opportunities to do that. Start next session doing that. If we don't front load the funding, these are billion-dollar projects, decades in the making, that your local jurisdictions, your taxing jurisdictions can no longer afford to do. And then they become patchwork, inefficient, duplicative, and waste of taxpayers' dollars to solve small problems when you could have solved the bigger problem.
Okay, y'all, the conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Yolitics.
So $54.5 billion. Yeah. And, you know, something else I thought was interesting with this, for the state to acknowledge there's a flooding problem, and you know, this goes back to what hurricane was in 2018? Hurricane Harvey.
17, yeah, Harvey.
17, and they passed this in 19. This goes back to that. But one of the questions I had, since Republicans have essentially run this state for 25 years with the legislature as well, is the flood plan an acknowledgement of the changing weather patterns here in the state? And you just heard Charles Perry there, the state senator from Lubbock, say, listen, the weather's always changing. Hmm. And that's what Republicans say a lot. It is always changing. Scientists say, no, this is more serious because of the carbon that humans have put here the past century or so. That was an interesting takeaway for me.
Mm-hmm.
That on the side, though, put that on the sideline, it sounds like to me lawmakers are going to make this a priority. Of course, they can't pay $54 billion in one biennium. And as the senator said, there aren't enough vendors to do all this work.
No.
If they were to say, here's a $54 billion check, go for it.
Right.
There's just not enough people to physically do the work.
Yeah, and you know, you may not hear that term climate change being acknowledged as part of this, but you know, they do expect that over time, this is going to get to be a bigger problem here in Texas. Not only because a lot of people keep moving here and you know, we keep putting up homes and businesses and developing land and maybe not doing it in the best ways, but also because, yeah, weather patterns. You know, whatever they call it or decide to not call it, I think that the takeaway here, though, is that they are finally looking at this and going, okay, uh-oh, Houston, we have a problem. And Houston does have a problem.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, it's and we think of Houston with flooding. We think of places like Pasadena, especially, that are just notorious over the years. But it's everywhere here in Texas that we're having these issues. So whatever they decide to call it or acknowledge or not acknowledge, at least they are acknowledging that there is a problem and that it's going to take some fixes and that we're going to have to put the money into those fixes. If you'd like to, by the way, read the report. We're linking to it in the summary to this podcast. Again, it's 290-something pages. It's not necessarily, you know, easy, fun reading, but it has a lot of maps and details, and you can actually zoom down and kind of look at where your neck of the woods is and sort of the things that they're seeing in your area as far as problems go.
And I know you fancy a lot of these odd journals, so I'm sure you've read all 293 pages.
I skimmed it.
You read the executive summary, didn't you?
I made it through like the first, I'd say, 70 or 80 pages, and then I was like, you know, I think I'm going to have to ask her to just sort of fill in some blanks after that. Yeah. But I did skim through the rest of it. There's a lot of information in there.
And this is going to be an issue you're going to be hearing a lot more about come January. You know, in the coming years, you're going to be hearing more about this. Yeah. Dallas-Fort Worth doesn't have enough water right now for 50 years out.
Yeah.
Houston, Austin, San Antonio, they don't have enough water. On the opposite end of that, we've got to figure out how to stay above, keep our heads above water.
Yeah, because on any given day, all of those places that you just mentioned can be a couple of feet underwater.
Indeed so. Thanks for listening to this episode. We're back next week, so we hope you join us in. And hopefully Wheeler's going to dress up for the next episode as well. Because Wheeler, as I've told you a million times, people watch this on YouTube. They don't just listen to your voice.
We're having a beer here, and you're in a, like, why didn't you just put a vest on, too, and have a three-piece suit going on? Why don't you button that suit? Like, button it all the way up to the top. Let's get a tie, too.
Let's talk about three-piece suits just for a second here before we go. You're the last guy I know that wears a vest. Do you still wear vests?
I do every now and then, and I like to do it on television. Especially like in August, because I get the nastiest messages from people on social media about, it's 108 degrees outside. What are you thinking, you idiot? Why are you wearing a vest? And it's like, guys, I'm in the air conditioning. All I'm not standing outside.
First world problems, Wheeler.
Jeez.
First world problems.
Well, it's them with the first world problems. Like, do you have nothing else to think about today than to sit here and message me about this? Now I purposely wear the vest in summer.
I shouldn't have asked that question.
It was a loaded question.
We'll see y'all next week.
Speaking of floods.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics each Wednesday night at 8:30.